Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perot, and I'm very pleased to have with us today Kate Burkholder-Harris from the Alliance to End Homelessness as we continue our look at Affordable Housing Week here on Lake 88. Kate, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We've been trying to take a look at this issue from so many different angles, and we wanted to bring someone in who had a larger regional perspective, if you will. You're based out of Ottawa, and of course you take a look at all of Eastern Ontario and provincial issues as well that we're going to be talking about, provincial initiatives too. So really, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Yeah, thanks. And it's great to have more questions focused on housing. So always appreciate that opportunity.
You're very welcome. Well, let's before we get started, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with the Alliance to End Homelessness. And tell us about your organization.
Yeah, so the Alliance in Ottawa, and there's many alliances, so always good to specify which. So I'm the executive director there, but the Alliance I call small but mighty. We have about 70 member agencies. For a long, long time, we've only ever had one staff. We've grown that to about three in the last couple of years, but it really is the strength of the membership. So agencies working in the housing and homelessness sector on the ground who know what's happening and can feed back and inform policy. So a lot of our work has been on advocacy pieces, public mobilization, research. And I would also say increasingly, how do we bring people together and really focus on a coordinated effort to end homelessness in our city?
Really interesting, because that point there, how do we bring people together and work on the coordinated effort with what you said at the beginning? You know, you've gone from one staff to three. This is a huge issue, and you have three staff and you're trying to bring communities together to work on this.
Yeah. And to be fair, I think part of it is that our focus, we don't do frontline service. Our focus is system wide. And personally, I used to do frontline in mental health. I love the work, working with folks who are on the street, going to hospital. And, you know, I left because 98% of what people were dealing with was a system issue. And it was generally a housing issue first, and not being able to afford safe, affordable housing. And that really motivated me to focus on the system side. So we are small, but, you know, our focus is very narrow. Our scope is on how do we tackle the system pieces with all of these partners, with the City of Ottawa, and do this well to really have a common goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are things that, of course, will reverberate and ripple outside of the City of Ottawa, because as you said, you're working with other stakeholders. And obviously, you're in communication with people who are in similar lines of work across the province.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm one of the co-chairs of the Ontario Alliance to End Homelessness as well. And we have partners, you know, in Northern Ontario, all the way to, you know, the GTA and big cities. So it's really helpful to hear diverse perspectives about how, you know, different communities are experiencing the housing crisis. But the common thread is everyone is experiencing a housing crisis.
Absolutely. And we wanted to talk to you about a few different issues here. One of them was the fact that people sometimes say, well, if you can't find housing in small town Ontario, why don't you just move to the big city? There should be jobs there, and there should be housing availability, affordable housing availability. But that always isn't the greatest idea.
No. And I mean, the first thing is people want to stay in their community for the most part, right? Like, people don't necessarily want to move. Their connections, their families, they're all in the town potentially that they grew up in or that they've settled in. So, I mean, that's the first piece of that story. But I think the other thing is, you know, small businesses, we work with the Ottawa Coalition of BIAs. They can't hire enough staff anymore, those small businesses, because no one can afford to live in the city. And increasingly, that bubble is expanding. And in Eastern Ontario, more and more of the smaller towns also are spaces where housing is unaffordable. So you tend to have a worker shortage then, and maybe the jobs are there, but the housing isn't there. It's so fundamental to be able to have that, to get staff.
It's really interesting. There's two points that you wanted to make, and I think that they're definitely intertwined. One of them is that supply of housing isn't necessarily the issue. It's what supply is there and who it is for.
Yeah. And I think one of the frustrating things right now, and the focus certainly from all levels of government, from a lot of policymakers, we're having the wrong conversation. And the conversation we're having is all about we don't have enough supply. And actually, in terms of just sheer numbers, we have oversupply compared to our population growth. Every year, Canada has about 30,000 more homes than the population growth. And that's a first piece that's really important. The second piece is, Who are those houses for? Who are those homes for? Where is the affordability in that? And that's the thing. We have an oversupply in housing that is often too expensive for the, you know, average Canadian income. And the other piece of that is housing is increasingly an asset, right? There's lots of housing sitting empty because people are buying housing. They see it as an investment and they let it sit there. And that is not foreign buyers predominantly. It's Canadians with equity who are in the housing market who see it as a smart investment.
So why do you see this conversation being steered in the wrong direction? Who's at the helm of that ship?
That's a great question. I think it's a convenient answer, right? Like it's a convenient way to frame the conversation. We just need to build more. But I think, again, we need to build more private interest. Like that's very much where the focus is. It sounds good. It sounds good for business. When you look at successful countries that are doing well in the housing front that don't have a crisis, they build a lot of nonprofit housing that is removed from being an asset class. And they see it as a basic human right. And it also reduces the cost in the private market because there's enough choice of nonprofit housing. And also the housing is really good quality. And I think people have an image that we can't build more social housing. It's not good quality. And nothing could be further from the truth when you look at the kind of builds that are happening now. There's beautiful spaces people are using. They're net zero buildings. Leadership really in the environmental side of housing too. So I think we have to start thinking differently about what nonprofit housing can be, and that it's a very reasonable option for people. But I think in Canada, we kind of have a perspective that's so focused on home ownership. And it doesn't have to be. A third of the population rents. Like it's not all of us, you know, it's a pretty big chunk of folks who are renting anyways. So how do we create options for them, which actually helps to decrease the price in the private market as well?
And you're looking often at people who have got social issues, people who are on ODSP or are receiving other stipends and so on. When you're looking at the type of affordable housing that would really suit them, seniors is another group for sure. And definitely they would certainly fall into the not-for-profit housing category, wouldn't they?
They would, but I think there's the deep affordability, and increasingly we talk about the missing middle. And in that missing middle are, you know, families who just right now are paying, you know, 50, 60, 70% of their income on housing. And imagine what we could do if people were all only paying 30% of their income, whatever that income is. That is the greatest poverty reduction we could possibly do in this country. Yeah.
It's amazing because we see this. They call it an exodus from the cities out here because we have seen our population just grow in the smaller communities, even some, you know, the Lakebound communities as well. People are coming out here because they can work from home now in many cases. And it's a way of life that they absolutely adore. It's beautiful out here. If you haven't been, come on out. But it certainly is creating the illusion that there's not that many people buying necessarily in Ottawa, but we hear these stories all the time about the average housing price or house price going up, and it's going to hit $1 million. Ottawa, I do believe, is the number three or four, you know, highest place to live right now in the country. And that was never the case before.
Absolutely. And I always thought that Ottawa kind of had the special sauce in the sense that we had a really high, actually the biggest median income in the country. I think it's 109,000. Don't quote me on that. Mm-hmm. And some of the lowest big city prices for housing. And that has changed in the last couple of years. We no longer have that kind of special piece that made it a really attractive city. But you're experiencing that secondary bubble of people just moving out and out. And really, that's going to drive up the cost of housing as well, for sure.
And that goes back to what you were saying. It chews up the supply for a certain amount of people. And then you have people who are now selling homes or preparing units for rent that they want to target that higher thing. And that goes into the second part of what I wanted to talk about that's really intertwined. We spoke about this with Mayor Sean Panko from Smiths Falls on Monday, rent evictions. And, you know, this is something that is happening clear across Ontario.
Yes. And actually, locally, we've launched a province-wide survey called Report Your Rent Eviction. And we're really trying to suss out what are the fraudulent evictions. We've heard from legal experts up north. We've worked with groups like Acorn Canada, the Right to Housing Network, all of these experts in the housing world who are hearing all of these increased anecdotes of people experiencing an eviction, often under false pretenses. The most common is an N-12. Owner says, you know, I need you to move out because I'm going to be moving in, or a family member is. And within the same year, the house is back on the market. The unit is a higher price than that legacy tenant had been paying. And I'm not saying that that is all landlords at all. I think there's lots who are abiding by the rules for sure, but we have heard of an increase. So we want numbers on that. And we want numbers to be able to demonstrate to government that this is an issue. And the only way to get out of this is not just more housing. There's a regulation piece too. We can build all we want. We lose 15 units that are affordable for every single purpose-built rental in this country. So if we do not tackle the regulatory side and just build, 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 we're not going to stop the loss of existing affordable housing. And that's what we're seeing with fraudulent rent evictions.
When I speak to politicians about this, they all speak about the same thing that they need from the government, whether it be from the provincial government or the federal government, and that's money. So let's take a look. We brought you in to talk about, you know, sort of the bigger picture here. So let's take a look at two aspects of that. We'll start at the provincial level with the housing affordability report and reaction to that. That's something that you're very interested in, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting is there's criticism from both sides on this issue, which probably means they got some things right, which is good. So I think some of the pieces around densification, I think some of the pieces about really wanting to move away from the kind of not in my backyard attitudes that can come out where people can put a pause on a project and really tie it up because they don't want it to be in their neighborhood. So they put through an appeal. I think there's some smart movement in wanting to reduce things like that happening. But I also think that it was called the affordability report. And I think I'm actually even bungling that, but it wasn't about affordable housing. It was very much about people who are kind of middle and upper income, not having enough supply and home ownership, which again, you know, 30% of our country is renting. And I'm assuming those numbers are similar in Ontario. So it wasn't really addressing that. It actively said in the appendix that it was not addressing deep affordability. And it was really focused on that bigger piece. One of the challenges, it's a lot of investment, or it's a lot of moving towards the private sector, having more opportunity to build, very little on the regulatory side. And still that focus on how do we get private developers to keep building, and often single family homes, though I do think they tried to move a bit more towards density in some of the you know, city areas as well.
It's amazing because you look at affordability and you look at the ability to have a place to hang your hat as one of the most basic rights, you know, mm-hmm. basic needs, if you will, of people. It doesn't matter what class you are. And yet here we are dancing around the subject at different levels of government. That's for sure. It certainly seems like the municipalities are willing to take the lead on this and to do what they can. But as we said, they need money. They need money from the provinces to make it happen. And then, of course, we just had the federal budget come out, and there was some criticism there as well, especially because we heard about affordable housing so much over the course of the election mm-hmm. campaign. Every single party had a solution or had ways mm-hmm. that they were going to help reduce the problem. What do you think of the budget and what we've seen?
Well, I think the frustrating thing is that we have invested the majority of national housing strategy money in the private market. We are subsidizing the private market. Not enough has gone to the nonprofit market, and too many of the programs they've developed is open to both the nonprofit sector and the private sector. So even within that, if a private developer is subsidized, the, you know, strings attached to what an affordable unit is really not affordable for most people. Yes, sometimes it's that 30% mark. We have a building in my neighborhood where it's 30% of somebody who could be making $109,000. And I mean, that's good for that household, but that is not affordable housing. And mm-hmm. and to be subsidizing that context, I think really doesn't look at the big picture. It is a ladder. And when you subsidize on the bottom end of that with nonprofit removed from the market housing, you actually start to reduce the housing prices for everyone. And you know, the frustrating part is homelessness is new. It's only about 40 years old. And the reason I talk about housing is because that was the thing that we did differently, you know, from the 1950s to the 70s. In the 70s, we were building 20 to 30,000 units every single year, just for nonprofit housing and social housing. And, you know, the model may have changed a little bit, but we didn't really have homelessness during that time. Started to happen when the federal government stepped away from putting that level of funding into the nonprofit sector.
So you want to see the federal government obviously step up their game.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting is there's sort of a CMHC, the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation, delivering the National Housing Strategy. This used to be what they did, right? They did do single family homes after World War II, but they also did real investment and moving on getting nonprofit housing built in this country. And right now we have a very program-based National Housing Strategy that ultimately is doing a lot more investment on the private side and not enough on the nonprofit side. So the people who need it most, and increasingly people who may not thought they have needed it most 5 years ago, are in that position as well. And everybody is experiencing that housing crunch, including people who want to get into the market. So if you invest at the bottom end, you actually start to see reductions at the top end as well.
I think a good exercise for anyone who's listening right now, who's wondering just how bad the issue is to take a look at what their income is on their own. If you're married, you know, have a partner, whatever, and then go out there on the web or whatever and try to find a place, you know, see what it would be like. Look in different spots. You know, you may be living in Perth, look in Smith Falls, Carleton Place, whatever, just to get an idea if you don't already know, just so that you have that perspective. And then look in Ottawa too. Yeah. And really, I think that's the only way that people are going to see what exactly is going on here, and then start to demand of the government, of their MPPs, of their MPs, the change that is needed to make it better.
Yeah. 100%. And I think that's it. Let's start asking the right question. Why is housing unaffordable? It's not unaffordable because of supply alone. And that's the answer we love to talk about. It's unaffordable because we're losing 15 units for every one purpose-built unit. It's unaffordable because it's become an asset. It's not that it is anymore a, you know, home for people, a basic human right, a basic human need. So we have to tackle that part of the equation as much as we need to tackle building the right kind of supply for different income levels.
Kate, thank you so much for this conversation today. Are there any words that you'd like to leave our listeners with as we take a last stab at this?
Yeah, I mean, if anybody is experiencing eviction that they think might be in that space of, you know, it didn't seem quite right, maybe the landlord, you know, did some harassment tactics, increased amenities overnight, things like that, please fill out our survey. It's at endhomelessnessottawa.ca/report-your-rent-eviction. It is Ontario wide. We really want to understand this trend that's happening more. And I know we have heard that there are fraudulent evictions increasing. So we want to put some numbers behind that and be able to tell that story more clearly to policymakers.
Kate Burkholder-Harris from the Ottawa Alliance to End Homelessness, co-chair of the Ontario Alliance to End Homelessness as well. Thank you so much for joining us today and providing this perspective.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
You're very welcome. Our guest today on In Focus, as mentioned, Kate Burkholder-Harris from the Alliance to End Homelessness. Now, tomorrow, Affordable Housing Week will continue with Cornerstone Landing's Terry Lee Kelford, of course, a well-known local homelessness awareness advocate who shed light on the situation from a youth and young adult perspective, as well as what's going on in our communities from a social perspective. I'm Bob Perreault. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful afternoon.